The following interview of George R. Pemlot was made for the Mill Valley Library Oral History Committee by Betsy Andreessen in March of 1975.
George Pemlot, how long have you lived in Mill Valley?
Had you lived
in Mill Valley?
We had lived in about 40 years.
Uh-huh. And when did you first come to Mill Valley? With your parents?
During the earthquake, they came in 1906. Mm-hmm. I was born in San Francisco and went through the earthquake. And so after that, they came to Mill Valley.
Uh-huh. And then you went to school in Mill Valley. What school did you go to?
Oh, Summit School. Summit School, the old one. And we were the first class that graduated from Mill School. Mm-hmm. And then I went to TAM.
Oh, then you know Mr. Provine.
Bill Provine and I graduated from grammar school together.
Yes. I was just reading what he said about our old Mill Valley and our old Mill Valley night.
Well, you know, I have to laugh at some of the people. See, Bill, I don't consider a lot of them, even Lucretia, they weren't old-timers. They came to, we were already here. See, we always laugh, you feel that. Now, here's a picture of Bill. Wait a minute. Look.
Oh, that's Bill Provine.
That's mm-hmm. Bill Provine.
You like to tell us about the businesses. You seem to know a lot about the old landmarks of Mill Valley.
Well, what? I was thinking the other day, and this morning I wrote this thing down. Now, if you start where Brown's store, this freight shed used to be down below that. Then Brown's store, where Brown's store was behind, that was the fireman's dance hall. Now, out in front, coming up, was Taylor's Toy Store. And next to that was a French laundry. I don't remember the Frenchman's name now. And next to that was Charlie Chapman's pool hall. Now, then there was a vacant lot, and then next to that was Diefenbach's stables. Now, incidentally, those stables were where they kept the two-horse teams that were taxis in the early days, before the automobile. And Mr. Roth drove one of those, and another man by the name of Boudar. And the Boudar boys, they were pretty well known in Mill Valley, too. Then right next to that was Brady's Saloon. Now, my dad told me years ago that there was only one saloon in Mill Valley. And they paid $1,000 a year license. It was an exclusive deal. And I think when Mill Valley was Eastland, they couldn't have any. Now, next to that was the Eastland Bakery, which is still there, but it was run by a Hack family. Then coming up, next to that is the Pacific Market, which was run by Gus Oppenheimer, who later married Al Bagshaw's mother. Then on the other side of that was a Modern Bakery, and that was run by a fellow by the name of John Miller. All right, then on the corner there, going that way, we have Lockwood's Pharmacy. Now, you'd be going up Throckmorton.
Up towards Dowd's?
Up toward Dowd's. Now, next door, everybody says Apostes. That isn't the old one. The old one is Kingwell's. Kingwell's Candy Store. Then, on the other side of that is Ben Price's Cigar Store. Then on the other side of that, remember where Bardillo used to be, but it was Parks. Edna Parks' father was a shoemaker there. Then on the other side, there was a little store, I forgot what was there, but the big one was Columbo's Candy Store. And in the same building, that was the original Hub Theater, which was later became the Hiker's Retreat. That was the theater. Then there's an alley, and then there's Dowd's Stables. And that other building, I can't remember. On the building right on the other side of it, that was there. It always seemed to be changing hands. See, and that was as far as it went. That other building up further was built years later. Now,
the Maurer Building?
Yeah, the Maurer Building, because Maurer, That was the Freeze property. And Mr. Freeze married one of Maurer's daughters. So that's where that first went in. That was a beautiful building when they first made it, but it was just the wrong side of town. And then across the street for that in the early days was the Madrone Hotel. Now, as long that was up on the flat.
Oh, is that where all those little houses are?
Yeah, it's right up in the flat, right opposite the Maurer building up in the flat was the Madrone Hotel. Now, that was our first Boy Scout hall. Now, I don't remember the Madrone Hotel ever being in operation. It seemed to be kept up, but it was just vacant buildings as far as I was concerned. But I do remember it when it was a scout hall. Now, you come down from the Madrone Hotel, then the next building on the corner was McNamara Building, not the way it is now. It looked like an old English house there, and it was right in the corner before they remodeled it. That's where Goddard later came in, the McNamara Building. Then if you went up the, up this, that's Madrone, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, now if you went up Madrone, the next thing was the Mill Valley Record. That's its headquarters. And next to that was Keaton and Dowd's mortuary. Because I remember they used to have one of those horse-drawn jewel cases in there. Those kids wouldn't get within 50 feet of it. Now, on the other side of that, right in front of the library, that's where the only pepper trees are I know in Mill Valley, and that curve used to be. That used to be Dowd's Rock Crusher. They used to crush rock there in the early days, and down underneath they kept all the old wagons and stuff. Now, you come across the street from the Rock Crusher on Madrone. That was a Gomo residence. Now, right down below that was a Gomo blacksmith shop. Because I remember that well because I was a friend of his two sons, Lloyd and Harold. They later moved to Menlo Park. That was Gomo blacksmith shop there. Now, on where the Hub Theater that most people think of was built later, right in front of that. Sutherland, I think, owned that. A fellow by the name of Sutherland built that.
Is that where the Oddfellows Hall is?
Well, the Oddfellows Hall, I don't know, used to be in the Keystone Block. Maybe it might. They might be upstairs now, they used to be, the Oddfellows for years were in the Keystone Block. In fact, I never even thought of that.
Well, where the Hub Theater was is the Oddfellows. Maybe the Oddfellows bought the Hub Theater.
Oh, maybe they did, but that belonged to, I think the fellow's name was Sutherland, and they lived right next to the fire hall, a big house. Now, going down, let's keep these streets straight. Going down, if you went on the library, that's Lovell Avenue. Now, if you were going toward the fire hall, after the Gomo residence in the corner, there was a little house, I don't know who's with that, but there was a Chinese laundry in the middle of it. And then down further was McMiller's blacksmith shop. That's, McMiller is the one I was looking up in, used to have a ranch in Olema. Oh, Mac.
Oh, yes.
All right, now, that just about finishes that. You follow the street down and it'd run into the firehouse if you kept on going the level. Now, if you came down from where the Hub Theater is that you think of, right next to it, there was a little place, was Dowd's Shoe Store. Now, George Dowd, he was related to Dowd. I don't know what relation, but anyway, he was a Dowd, and that was his shoe store. Now, next to the shoe store, and I haven't looked lately, that belonged to Ralston White. It was is it still like an old home there? They haven't built there, have they? It was
oh,
the
yes,
old,
they've torn that all up.
Oh, that was the old, like an old home, and that was Ralston White. That he owned that home. That was an early day home. And he owned that, and incidentally, James V. Chase, attorney at law, was in there, and Ralston White was there. Now, coming down, next to it, there was a meat market. Now, Peter Meyer's in there. They weren't. The early days, fella owned that, was Katz's Meat Market. Because I remember he had a daughter, and we used to call her Lizzie Katz. Now, on the other side of Katz's Meat Market was the old barber shop. And the man, funny how you remember those things, and a fellow named Gish that owned that, And he and my dad were pretty good friends. Anyway, he had orders if he thought I'd need a haircut to grab me and pull me in. I guess it was 15 cents probably in those days, not $4. So I always stayed clear of him. Then on the other side of him was a little place, Will Valley, Mill Valley Real Estate. Then on the other side of this, there's a store that later was Delasol's Liquor Store. Before that, it was O.S. Pritchard Dry Goods. Now, I'm trying to remember for the life of me. I can't remember what was in that store. There used to be a store run by a fellow by the name of Ryman, and their house was where the present post office was, next to Costa. So it might have been there. I don't remember. But I do remember the one in the corner. That was a W.F. Allen grocery store, Heinz 57 varieties. It was right on the corner. And they later fixed that. The Safeway was in there at first. No, it was Skaggs in, I think. All right. Now, that would bring you to Bernard Street. Now, if you went up Bernard Street a little way on the opposite side, you'll get Skanky's Shoe Repair. Everybody in the town in the early day knew little chap, little Skanky. And
he's Japanese?
Yeah, and this kid wasn't all there. He was older than I was, and he was about so big. During the war, they were all interned. We never saw him again. But you...
I was scared.
Matt Skanky. They all little newspaper. And the Keystone Block. Now, it's changed hands so much. I don't know where the PG&Es were while they were there, and then R&M's. But if you go way back, in the middle of it, was the Sunset Market was owned by Martin. Later on, Ed Martin, the old man Martin, died. And then after that, Bagshaw bought it. But it really dates back. Then when another place there was a barber shop, a Spaniard, Chavez. He had his kids there. He's the one I used to like to go, George Chavez. And then that just about finished those stores. For a while, the post office was in there, and oh my gosh, they were always changing. And that Keystone Block, you should have seen. See, Mr. Nostrom, for the Kent State, he had a lot to do with him. He was the one that really fixed that building up so it looked like something, see, downtown. Before that time, it belonged to a fellow by the name of, I think his name was John Ray, and he was an ex-preacher, and he lived up in the hill here. All right, next to Chavez, you know where Rutherford's drugstore was? Well, in between there is where the Mountain Railroad tracks went. On the other side of that was Jones's Tailor Shop. Now, I can remember Jones because he used to have a big old dog called George, and Jones was the mayor of Mill Valley at one time. Then on the other side was the Mountain Railway office, and on the other side, that was the Bank of Mill Valley. See, then behind that, which was still there, is the Masonic Hall. And of course, you go over to the fire department, it was a little bit different in those days than it is now. And then it was a horse-drawn fire department. Us kids always beat the fire department to the fire. Then near the other side of that was a water company. I don't know if they still have an office there or not, do they? Well, that was their office. It was a little house that sat back. Then on over there was Savelli's Market. Now, in the early days, I understood Mr. Savelli was a butcher boy for Cats Markets. And then right on the side of it was a PG&E office. Now, I don't remember the PG&E. It moved from there over to the Keystone Block, but I don't know where it was before that time. Now, and of course, next to that was the Outdoor Art Club. Now, across the street from the Outdoor Art Club, way up in the corner was a garage, and that was the picture I had here. Later on was the Ever Ready Garage and Myers Cleaners. And incidentally, I remember that well because my dad sold bicycles, and he gave my brother a bicycle. In that garage, it was a showroom. Now, you don't see it there. He gave my brother a bicycle. And I put up a big fight and hollered, and he says, "Well, you don't even know how to ride a bicycle." Oh, yes, I do. Well, let's see if you can. And I took off down the hill, and I went around the flagpole and came back. It was the first time I was ever on a bicycle.
You made it, though.
And it was, I remembered it well because it was a little imported bicycle, a Crown. It wasn't about a 20, I guess about 26 inch in those days. And no coaster brake. You had to pedal all the time, see? But I got the bicycle. So I didn't forget that.
But let me...
Now, let's see. We got up to the bicycle. Uh-huh. No wonder I remember that picture. Right next to that was a Holden building. You know where El Paso is now? Well, that was the Holden building. And that was belonged to Cannonball Holden. Now, don't laugh when I tell you that. Apparently, in the early days, he'd been in the circus, and they shot him out of a cannon. And old Holden was a funny old bird, an old Dutchman. That building in the days up and down was kind of orphaned up there. See, because later on it was El Paso, and then the Sequoia Theater went in there. But at that time, the Holden building, that was the end of it, see, the old Holden building. And then it came on down to the little old house. It was Sui Key Market. Who, everybody in the early days know who Sui Key was. See, so he came down to Sui Key Market. After Sui Key Market, there was another stable. And I know later on Varney Brothers used it for a storeroom and stuff. But incidentally, I do know the Blithedale Creek goes right smack under it. But I don't remember what it was used, it ever being in use. Outside, maybe somebody had some horses or something there. I don't remember.
But you remember a tent city under there where people camped and stayed, sort of a resort down around Varney's and in the back there where all those trees were?
Well,
early days, there was a resort or a...
Not that far that? Back as I mm-hmm. could, because... But where the Sequoia Theater was, there was just nothing but bay trees and things, and behind that was the Thoney house. Now, Thoney, who was a fire chief, and later his kids were, was an ex-fireman. Somebody brought him from San Francisco. And my gosh, how many boys did they have? They had about 8 boys and 1 girl or something like that, the Thoneys. But I don't remember them camping in those days. Of course, they could camp. That must have been actually just after it was the Eastland Estate, see? Because if anybody did any camping, they did it. I would know about that because it would have been up in Old Mel Park, and we were the closest house to it. But it came down to Sui Keys, and then the old stable. Oh, and then there's an alley there. There's where the original post office was. It was on the other side, right next to where Varney's. Now, I don't remember what was in Varney's. Varney's weren't there. It was before their time. And up above, I think, was the Old Mel Valley Hotel, which the building's still there. Now, right on the corner, on the other side of Varney's store now, was the Mel Valley Hardware and Fuel Company. And that went all the way down. They used to bring the trains in there and unload into the with the coal and ice. And a man by the name of Mr. Kralius, who lived... he lived up near the Christ place. He and Al Loudon, Joan Loudon's father, he was a clerk in there. And I think Mr. Kappelman, who lived up on Summit Avenue, he was an old-timer, too. He owned that. But that was the only hardware store, was the what they used to call that Mill Valley Hardware and Fuel. And it ran there. You could get anything you wanted in the place. But that was right next to the big parking place. So. Now, let's see, what do we got in this town?
Was the old station still there?
The old station was still there. It was all wooden platform, and there was a wooden canopy where you got off the trains. And one boy one time, by the name of, I think it was Charlie Bradburn, climbed under this, it was planks, you know, all these things, and climbed under that and came out with a $5 gold piece, because people would drop their money. And they couldn't get, you know, and it was only, possibly maybe 18 inches under there. Well, us kids later on, we'd have to get up because you couldn't get down where the third rail was because you'd have to get it. But we'd crawl under there and look for, we'd find money, quite a bit of money, because they'd, around the, where the station, they make change and they drop money. And actually, in the early days, you saw as many as 8 and 10 cars come in here on a Sunday, maybe 5 or 6,000 people. And they take off, and go hiking all over the place. That's how Mr. Adler started the Hiker's Retreat, was on that account, because these people that hike, they want a place to change, they hike the mountain, and then come back and get a shower and come down and get the trains. Mm-hmm. And those tracks were full. I mean, and then I, having lived, then I lived in what they call Cascade Terrace, where the big steps start, and we were the closest house, and I always was in on the deal, because they had all these picnics. One time it was some kind of a Scotch deal or Italian deal, and I told the wife one time, I said, that's how I got to hate Swiss cheese. They'd eat all the good stuff, but they go to the city and didn't want the sandwiches, and they'd give me a whole bunch of sandwiches and all the Swiss cheese. I won't even look at it to this day.
You must have been hungry.
No. Oh, we were down there. I was down there with a kid. There was always kids around there, and then it was my backyard, not theirs. And we'd go down there and play, and I get invited to all the different picnics that they had in there. There was lots of nice tables.
You guided people, too, didn't you, on hikes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd take somebody who wanted to go, and I'd hike over to me. I was barefooted already.
Show them the way sort of be a guide and a companion.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to like that.
What were some of the things that you would see along the way, of the resorts and the restaurants along the way, to Muir Woods?
Oh, to Muir Woods.
Uh-huh.
The only one you would see. Now, wait a minute. If you went up, took up the Cascades, that's where the city slickers went. And they'd walk up the Cascades, the big steps, and up there. Later years at the top, they opened a little stand where the Bravos, that's an old family that used to be right at the top of the steps, the Bravos, they're still around too. And there was a little stand there. Soda water stand. I'll tell you about those later. Then if you went on over the shortcut, and just as you took, remember where the other day when we went by, and I said, there's a house built where these people used to go down to the other's trail. I remember one time there when a woman was hiking down there with high heels and fell and broke her neck. Well, you know, that was quite a deal for around here. But down below there, then Mr. Grethel had a little stand right at the top there. And incidentally, Grethel owned... He owned the place. Most of the place were the Hack's Bakery, the Eastland Bakery was, and all that. All those buildings in there, he owned that. Grethel did. But he had a little...
Oh, Grethel Hall. That was where the first city hall was.
Grethel. Well, he had one son, Bernard Grethel. And last I saw Bernard, he was teaching electrical engineering and in San Francisco. And then, my gosh, that's a long time ago, because I was going there. And then he told me at the time that Walter Hack, who was a pal of his, he was in the teacher in there, too, in this Heels business.
Oh, college. And they had a little soda stand. And
they had a little stand. It's on the toll road now, but it wasn't a toll road. Originally, it was just an old road. And then they made a toll road out of it, see, for a while. And then later it reverted to a public road again. Then down before you got into Muir Woods, there was Joe's place. And that was Tommy Bickerstaff's father and his uncle, Joe Bickerstaff. And he was game warden, incidentally, too, for a long time. That's how Tommy used to get the first limit every season.
Did you get one?
First limit of trout. The army or somebody used to give a, I don't know whether it was $10, $15 or whatever it was, some kind of a prize, whoever brought the first limited trot. And I think Tommy Bickerstaff always did. And years ago, we're speaking of that, they wouldn't, we could go and fish in Muir Woods. They didn't bother us, but later on, I know Tony Fraser, the ball player, I think he got arrested fishing in there, see, because the National Monument, in National Park, you can't take anything, not even a fish. So they stopped them later on in that when they got paid more attention to it. Mm-hmm. You know how Muir Woods actually was, how it got to be Muir Woods, don't you? My dad told me, in the early days, somebody, they wanted to condemn that for a watershed. And the only way they could save it was give it to the government for a national monument. And then they couldn't touch it. And they wanted to say, they wanted to cut that beautiful, oh, it would have been, look at the trees there. They cut that thing and made a beautiful watershed out of it. What about a good watershed, but not as good as in your woods? And those were the days when he was in real estate. And I think Bill Fowley worked for a fellow by the name of Slingman. There was some connection in there anyway. Somebody was already to condemn it, and I think Millwood belonged to Kent, and he beat him to the draw, or he had something to do with it and made the national monument. Either that or Senator, the original Senator Kent, was instrumental in getting it through the federal government to take it over, see. But that's how it got to be Millwood's, because otherwise they would have cut it out of there, and it was a good thing they did, see. But a lot of people I used to, well, I don't know, I just happened to hear that, and I was always interested in the...
Walk on over to Big Lagoon, or the...
Oh, gosh, yes.
That was popular.
Big Lagoon, oh, no, it wasn't popular. No. There wasn't anything there, but Big Lagoon was the first name of it, and then it got to be Bellow Beach, because Bellow owned it. And then it came back to Muir Beach, which is the proper name for it, because Muir Creek comes into it. But Big Lagoon had nothing there but a game club in the early days. And us kids used to run down, they arrest them nowadays, but we used to run up and down that beach naked all week long and go beachcombing. Because, that's the best beach here, because it's more or less of a southern exposure, see. And Big Lagoon and Little Lagoon, they were beautiful. There wasn't a house or anything there. None but this game club that was, there's kind of an inn there, but there was this game club in there, and that was all that was there. But we used to walk and go down them. But you were talking about stands. When you got to the top of the hill of Mill Valley, now if you wanted to go to the mountain, or if you wanted to go to Mill Woods, if you wanted to go to the mountain, you took the pipeline trail. And where it got its name was, it was the big, I guess that was about an 8-inch pipeline that went to that reservoir up on top of the hill. And Along that, they had stands. I know because my brother had one where I got broken in to learn how to make chains, and I took over one day chocolate bars and soda water and lemonade. And incidentally, when I wasn't very old, at the bottom of those big steps, I had my own little stand for my place, and I'd sell lemonade and your soda water and chewing gum, and people like this Hershey's nut chocolates and things like that, see. Mm.
And that was right up on the stairs.
Was in Mill Valley when I was a kid, but up above there was three or four in that mountain house. How long did they say they were there? Well, anyway, the mountain house used to belong to an old fellow by the name of Adam. And on the other side of that, there was another friend of my brother's. I think the Sierra Club acquired that brick building, and that belonged to the Newbegin family of the Newbegin bookstore in San Francisco. And Bob Newbegin, I think, had a stand down there. It was just a weekend stand, see, for the hikers. And then they go from there, and they go up to the. But I don't think Adam had always had a stand, or I know he didn't have a restaurant, because that's where the road stopped there, you see, because the railroad cut through there and went down to Muir Woods, and then you continued over on a pipeline trail, which is now a road to Stinson Beach, but that was a trail too. That was another continuation of the pipeline along there. And that would take you all the way over to eventually down to Stinson Beach. You could go that way. Or if you didn't like that way, you could go where the Dipsy Race goes. See, down Muir Woods and up by Lone Tree and over and down in there.
Well, now this area down around Park, that wasn't developed when you first came, was it?
Oh, gosh, no. This hill opposite Edmund McGuire Hill, that was a Boyle's home. One home up there belonged to the Boyle.
Probably a Park School.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a Boyle. Hugh Boyle had his big home up on the top of that hill. It was quite a few years later before they ever developed that. Mm-hmm. Because you see how he got it. The Boyles were, and the Diefenbach were tied in with the Reed estate. And Reed had the original Spanish grant, see? Because it was John Reed, I think, that built the old mill. See, so that's where Boyle, he had, I guess he gave the property to the town, too, for Boyle Park.
Did you play baseball in Boyle Park?
Oh, gosh, yes.
What were some of the incidents that happened? How did you start, and who were the sponsors?
Oh, we used to have a team, and I think if I remember right, I'm trying to remember the team. We called it the Tamils. We were pretty good, too.
Was Shalek a member of that team?
No, he wasn't old enough.
Oh. Because he was one of the famous.
Oh, one of them. Well, we had one of the famous ones, too. Don't undersell him. Tony Freitas, who was a famous pitcher, went to Old Mill School. In fact, he wasn't good enough to make our team then. And I used to kid Tony later on when he was pitcher. I said, you know how you got to be such a good pitcher, don't you? I says, from knocking the squirrels all off a tree with rocks. Yeah, we had quite a few baseball players in the town. Tommy Bickerstaff used to be second to none as a baseball player himself. Mm-hmm. He was a good player. Mm-hmm. And did he love it.
Well, who built the park, the ballpark?
The town apparently built. Ed Grassley built it. Originally, there was two great big ditches on both sides. There was a creek comes down from around Buena Vista, and then the other creek comes in from the golf links, and they, right behind where the grandstand was, those two creeks came together, and they come on down here, right here, to this creek, see, eventually. But there were great big deep ditches, and the first one they filled, I remember them, because they dumped a lot of old cars there right behind the grandstand. And the backstop, and they dumped a lot of old cars there, and filled all the old cars in there, and filled that up. See, and then eventually they filled the whole thing. And that made it beautiful, because before those days they used to knock a ball, particularly on the south east side, to knock the balls over in the willows, and they'd have a hard time finding it. See, because even like that, I mean, in the early days, even before the golf links, that was Warner's Canyon, and that belonged to Mrs. Warner, and that was a beautiful place in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there were no houses up there. That was way out in the
Way out in the sticks, yeah. Nobody wanted that. Mm-hmm. I was thinking the other day, right down here, I can't remember, it was Fern or someplace, they used to have a build off the bridge. Right near the bridge was a place, a little fire wagon. One of these hand trucks that you grabbed. There was two of them down in the park here. One was around in there, and they had this built out, and it was the hose and two wheels, and it was pulled. Men would have to pull it, and for years it was there.
Would you think that was right on this corner?
I'm pretty sure it was right in this corner and this side. I'm pretty sure it was, because I was trying to remember it the other day when I was reading this about just where those two things were, because for quite a few years after they had those. Two little wheel buggies with a fire hose on. I don't think they had a water tank. You just grabbed those and pulled a hose to someplace, see?
That was sort of a supplementary fire station.
Yeah, that's a volunteer fire department.
Oh, I see. Well, was there a shed that it was kept in?
Yeah, just open shed. Just an open shed.
Well, I understand that this corner place had something like
that. Well, that was it then. That was it. But there was another one around here somewhere, too. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I know one of them here because I remember quite well those things. Like, just like in the early days, now you went up and you don't see them anymore. They wouldn't last 5 minutes. It was Mount Tamalpais Fire District, and you went up on top of the mountain, and they had a big box that looked like a coffin. And if you got in that box, there's brush hooks, axes, and then the long things with burlap sacks on them to knock out for firefighting. And they'd steal it all nowadays, but in those days, every one of them had a brush hook or something, and all that equipment in, so if the men went up the fire, the stuff was there.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
In fact, the first time they had a fire here was, I think, first year was 1913. Mm-hmm. That took a lot of it. Then West Point, oh my gosh. Then West Point Tavern, and we had lots of little fires. One fire particularly, I was in San Francisco, that must have been 1928. And it was clear, and I could see smoke coming from the top of the mountain, and I came across on a ferry boat, went home, the tavern was on fire, changed my clothes, went down and caught the train, went up to fight fire, and I just got up there in time with some other fellas, and the tavern had burned, and we went in the tavern stove, we pulled out in the oven, the guy had been cooking chicken, we got just in time to get a chicken apiece.
I think he was hungry.
How old were you then?
I was quite old then, because if I was working in the city, that was 1928, see. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing it from there and coming over and finding out and then going home and getting my... We were living then Hill Street and Oakdale.
You were about 23 then, I guess.
Yeah, and then I went old enough to get down. Anyway, my dad caught the train and up we went. And you see, there was another thing, too, that I don't even hear about. We used to...
I just want to be sure that we're not over. Yeah, go ahead.
We used to hike up the pipeline. Of course, I wouldn't hike the pipeline. If I wanted to get to the mountain fast now, I'd go up to the end of the Cascades where the old dam was and to take the fire trail right up, and I'd come right up by Adams Mountain. If you wanted to get to the mountain in a hurry, well, actually faster, you drive up or take a bicycle up and leave it at the end of the, just where the old mill dam was, and hike the fire trail right up the hill, and that'll bring you right out of the mountain home. Mm-hmm. Then you take the hogs back right up to the mountain. Well, we used to do that, and then we stay around there late at night, and Valmer Thoney, the other was Pat Patterson, usually Valmer, and we'd ride the gravity car down. Now, the gravity car, that's what they left them out there for, but there wasn't any passengers quite often coming down the gravity car, so we'd get in with him and we'd come down the mountain. they'd come on all the way down past West Point, the double bow knot, and then come on down and come in the Mill Valley on this and ringing the bell.
Would the gravity car come down the...
All the way from the mountain, all the way down with the gravity
come
car.
Down the bowl I thought the gravity car came right
straight
down.
No, it came down the regular track, see? Mm-hmm. Now, the double bow knot, you know what that was for? That was to make a switch so one car could go to the Mule Woods. Now, in the early days when the Mountain Railway went up there, if you wanted to go to Mule Woods, and not too many of you, they put you in the gravity car and you go down to Mule Woods in the gravity car. Later on, the engine would go down to pick you up in the gravity car. But on top of the mountain, they had the gravity car, so people that were late, and particularly if some fellow was working there, well, Valley knew us kids, so we'd ride down the gravity car. I mean, we were going, too.
That must have been exciting.
Oh, it's a shame they ever took that railroad up.
Mm-hmm. I never
when you figure, that. When you go to, when you see, you go up to Fort Bragg and they give you this skunk train, well, that couldn't even compare with this thing.
I think it's sad that they...
It is, it is.
Well,
sad.
It was hard to maintain, and it was expensive, right. And it was during the Depression,
sure.
And things just couldn't...
Well, I don't know during the Depression if it was as much that, it wasn't too far out. And then I think the poor old Mountain Railway train started that fire of 29.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't funny, you know, that fire.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember I went up to it at Pius Avenue, and I left my car down by the old mill school. And I had gone up there, and there was lots of things we could do, but we didn't have water. They dug on... Well, the main thing, we didn't have the water. And when I got back, that fire was within a block or two of where I left my car. That's when... And we got down, it got all the way down to Alcatraz Place. Now, it got any closer, they got the fire department. Mm-hmm. And I know the Southern Pacific, there was two big tracks there. That's where they ran in a lot of trains, steel trains, too. They weren't the kind that would burn,
mm-hmm.
see,
mm-hmm.
to evacuate the place. Because there isn't very much they can do when that fire gets a good start and it creates its own breeze. And I've seen those flames... this lick about 200 feet and this boom, just like a blowtorch. Mm-hmm. And the only thing to be, only place to be then is out of the way. And it wasn't too bad. People like fighting the fire here, we that knew it, we'd know pretty much our way out, but it wasn't very safe for people to come over here and start helping that didn't know the country. Mm-hmm. Because I always figured whenever I was up there fighting a fire, how am I going to get out of here?
Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to baseball, did you play baseball at TAM with Mr. Wondering?
Yeah, he was my coach.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I'm still in the... I got a big block tee somewhere and, for baseball.
Well, didn't he have a winning team for 20 years or some...
Oh, baseball, you couldn't touch Tam. Mm-hmm. Football, well, he didn't have football, but he had baseball, and gosh, he always had a winning team. We were in different league, too. We played a lot of San Francisco teams then. We didn't play him. We didn't play San Rafael. There was too much rivalry between San Rafael and Tam. But Tam always had a good baseball team. You couldn't beat him, and he turned out, my gosh, if you started to figure out the professional... The Martins? Oh, I can think of Martins. I don't think Tony went to, Freitas went to Tam. I can't remember. Maybe he did. I know his brother did, George. But
were they the Freitas family, Carlos?
Yeah, and he was the superintendent of the streets, Mr. Freitas, at one time in Mel Valley. Mm-hmm. And he lived way at the end, practically at the end of Throckmorton, just as you made the turn there. And not quite. The end house in it to make the turn was the place Dr. Kemp finally got it. But before that time, right near the end was Freitas' place. And my gosh, that man had a place. Here, I remember I used to get apples. You know, like those apples we got in Oregon?
Yeah.
He had an apple orchard in there. Honest to gosh, the apples were 5 inches in diameter.
Is that where the bowling alley was? There was a bowling alley down near... down at the end of Throckmorton. Not way at the end,
no,
but at Cornwall.
Oh, you're thinking of... the nearest I'm thinking of... No bowling alley would be quite this way. Next to the Kleiss's place, Harvey Kleiss's, there used to be the Kenilworth Inn that burned out. Burned down. That burned down. I was a pretty small kid because I can remember when it burned. Incidentally, I can remember when the... I'm pretty sure I can remember when the Blithedale Hotel burned not long after that, see, because it didn't register too much, but later on I began to think about that old Blithedale Hotel that was up in Cottage Avenue. And the Kenilworth Inn was there, then right up above there, for the life of me, I can't remember the name of that great big inn. That might have been the bowling alley there. Later on, the Bank of America or somebody took that place over for a while. For a kind of a weekend place. You know what one I mean.
I think it was Kenilworth.
Hmm?
I think it was called Kenilworth.
The original Kenilworth burned. And
I see.
Up around the corner there was another one that's still there, I think. It's an English-type building. And it was
Simons built a house there.
No,
Simons.
Simons house, the Kenilworth Inn would have been between Simons and Kleiss's house. Because, see, I knew Mrs. Simons well. They used to live behind us up on the hill when we were in Millside Terrace. They lived above us, and so did Mrs. Hunter, who was Mrs. Simons' sister, right up. And then later on, they built up on Throckmorton, on the corner there. No, this was right opposite. This place I'm speaking of is right opposite them. You go up and you make a fancy turn, and it's right opposite Simon. It'd be north, I guess, northwest of where Simon's house was. They were, I can't remember the little street they were on. They were on...
Cornwall.
Cornwell, and but the other was a big, great big estate in there. And I pointed to you out north.
Your father was in business in Mill Valley.
So was I.
You were. Uh-huh.
Well, my father was in business after he went out of the real estate business. He didn't like that. He said it was too crooked. He had to be a crook to be in it.
Yeah, he didn't.
He said that you had to be a crook to be in it. He says he didn't like any part of it. So he went, you see, he was originally an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came from the east to San Francisco, he was an electrician there. So, but anyway, he came over here. And then I think that's when he went into the real estate business, about the time... 1907, I think they had a lockout in San Francisco. That means they locked the employers locked out all the unions, see. So that's, I think, when he went in the real estate business, and how long he was in after that, I don't remember, but then he came over here, and he was in the electrical mm-hmm. business here. In fact, before, well, when I lived here, we had Electricians Incorporated, which was in, was my dad, myself, Bob Gerrish, who's still in business, and Ed Watson. And we were in the Square Theater building. We had a store, had a shop or a store right in the Sequoia Theater building. We had all the business to us, but to us, maybe.
Oh,
the depression
wow.
part of that.
Well, your Pimlott, a name Pimlott, that strikes a bell.
That's Pimlott Lane.
And
you're thinking of.
Yes, uh-huh. Where's that?
Up, way up on top of the hill by Edgewood. It comes off of. Around Molino and Edgewood, up in there. There's a little lane up in there.
Mm-hmm. And is that where you lived at one time?
No, we never did live there.
Oh, how did you? Did your father develop that
he
area?
Developed,
as
helped
a,
develop that.
Oh,
uh-huh. There's another one up there somewhere, Seymour, too. He was in there.
Might as well get a street named after
yeah.
him. Oh, sure,
but
well.
Well, there are many streets named after girls in Mill Valley.
Oh, sure.
Eleanor,
oh, my gosh,
Florence,
yes.
And different people who's were connected with...
Well, most
developed.
Of them, not like Ralston now, most named after Ralston Lane. Right? Throckmorton is named after, wasn't it Throckmorton, something about Throckmorton, about the time it was Eastland?
Mm-hmm.
In there, see. I don't know where.
Connection?
Well,
he
was
an
the
early, developer.
Early developments in this, in Mill Valley, see. And if you can,
Miller
you,
and...
You can, most of these, you can go around these streets and find, there are usually a reason for the name of these streets. I mean, they date back. But, I mean, a lot of those, like Pimlott Lane, for a good many years, was nothing but a name of the map. See, I used to get quite a kick out of it.
It's a
when I was working
name.
On the
people like that.
When I was working on the bridge when, well, of course, I was on the bridge for 35 years when I retired to Golden Gate. And
you worked as an electrician on the Golden Gate
yeah.
Bridge.
And when one day a sergeant said to me, "Hey, George," he says, "you got anything to do with that Pimlott Lane in Mill Valley?" Well, I says, "It was named after my dad. Why?" Well, he says, "A fella came in here for commute, and he gave his address as Pimlott Lane, and he says, 'Holy smokes, we got a Pimlott working for us.'" So he said, "Did you have anything to do with it?" I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, I'm related to it. Yeah, that was... No,
So then you worked with your father until the bridge, and then you started working...
Well,
no.
I worked with my father. I worked... Well, not, no, I didn't always work. I was always... just grew up to be an electrician. I guess I couldn't miss. And I worked with my father a good many years, and then I left and went to Hill's Coffee Company in San Francisco, and I came back and went to work for him. And then sometimes I'd... work on my own in those days, see. I mean, he'd have
jobs.
And you
went to work for Hamilton Field.
Oh, well, yes. And my dad, later on, did all the work at TAM, see. Laid all TAM out made electrical. And I worked there, too. I worked there when I was a student in TAM. But most of the time, I...
Under Mr. Wood.
Yeah, under the Duke.
Yeah.
Oh, and Harry Russell, too. And Harry, I don't...
Is that Russell and Gooch? Russell?
No, did
oh,
you?
No.
No. No. Harry Russell, in the early, when I first went to TAM, was a hooky cop. And he was about as nice a fellow. Everybody liked him, but...
that Airstream group.
We've
seen him recently.
Well, by a caravan club, and every once in a while, we'll see Harry. And he's getting quite long in years,
Jesus.
You know, and I always got along with him.
He was a man when you were a boy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, he could have been 10 or 12 years older than I was. He was still a man.
2 years older.
Yeah, so anyway, we'd see Harry, and he says, "Oh," he says, "George," he says, "the students aren't like you kids." Because we used to, there was another fella and I, Henry Cluett, and he was raised in Mill Valley, his father. In fact, his father was an engineer for the Northwestern Pacific. And Henry and I very seldom went to high school on Monday. We took all over the hills to Muir Beach with our lunches and enjoyed ourselves. And
I think Harry knew it because he was probably just sorry he didn't go.
Remember he said to you, I didn't worry about you fellows because we knew you weren't getting into trouble. You were just fishing.
Yeah. I think that was the kind of a fellow Harry Russell was. He was a nice fellow. And he was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a doll.
Well, once we saw him about 2 years ago, didn't we? Or last time we saw him was Victorville.
About 2 years ago. Yes.
Yeah. And then he lives in San Diego or someplace down
there.
He was
pulling this large trailer. Oh, he was doing beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mill Valley developed very slowly, I guess, house-wise. It did
until World War II. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very slow in developing. Well, they didn't want it to develop. Let's put it that way. If you stop to look at some of these tracks and these people... Now, I know when we lived at Sardamilla Side Terrace, my gosh, that was a big place. When you figure what where we live now, the land it took. My dad said we had four lots. Well, I don't know what size the lots were, but it looked like about 5 acres to me. And everybody else had that much land. See, they weren't letting go of that. Of course, nowadays you couldn't afford it. Just like my friend that lived up in Molino, Tommy Ford place. Remember, I said to you, I said, gee, I could have bought that home after his mother died, and that for about $5,000. And my gosh, what a big place, see? That was the one, if you've ever read in the Mill Valley paper, with this fellow Hornbostel, a Marine
His wife had leprosy.
Oh. Well, actually, have you got this?
Yes.
Oh, historical. It's historical, if I tell. My dad came, when we lived at Millside Terrace, my dad came down one day and we walked through the park, you know. He walked through the park, and who's there but Mr. Freitas, superintendent of the streets, and he's tearing all the shakes off of the old mill and they're putting new ones on. Oh, my dad.
The original shakes that tore off.
Your dad blew. Of course he blew because... Mike, I said original shake, and they were putting a better shake roof on there, so I think half of these shakes on there now are later shakes there and not the original.
Oh, no. I think most of it's been replaced.
Well, you know, I didn't realize until not long ago. Now, there wasn't a prettier place than where the three wells were. Mm-hmm. All right, mm-hmm. Now, what have you got there now? That used to be a beautiful place. They got homes there, and then you went across the street and you went up to the falls. That's where the oxen came down, I think. And you went to the falls and went in there. Why the dickens the town didn't get a hold of that three wells part and make a park out of it?
Well, it is a park. It's an open space.
Oh,
but
the
there are
there?
Well, there are a few homes around there, I think. But not...
Yeah, what about the... Yes.
But I do know that for years, San Rafael was the only place that had gas. They manufactured their own gas. Down here, we all had electricity. Either had electricity... You had wood, or you had kerosene, and coal. That's about all you had. So naturally, the town had more than our share of electric ranges.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's why.
Then later on, even during the Depression, the PGD, as a contractor, they'd pay me. You'd pay about $30. And the PG&E pick up the tab for about 70 more to get you, if you put in electric range against a wooden range, a competitive fuel.
Mm-hmm.
See, not a gas, but if it was competitive fuel, and so that's how we got a lot of these services. They put a big service in, and they put electric range, electric water heater. So Mill Valley more than had its share.
Oh, then they were competing with the coal company.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Anything that competed with them, then they'd make a underwriter for you. All of a sudden.
Yes. Tell us about Mr. Solon, Camille Solon.
Camille Solon. When he first came to Mill Valley, how my dad met him, I don't know. But my dad told me that he'd like me to take him around the county and so that he could sketch scenes and things. So I took him all over Strawberry and every place, probably for months. And later on, he made a lot of these pastel murals, I'd call them, and for my dad, and
in this house in Millside Terrace, they were all put above the, what do you call that, a dish cutter or whatever, I've forgotten so long. You know, where they used to keep the dishes on the shelf, a dish shelf. And then all the way around this room, and they were there. Well, later on, Camille Solon, he married and built his place at the end of Buena Vista Avenue. And incidentally, he was the main artist at San Simeon. I didn't know that till quite a few years later, but when he was first fresh from England, it's a good thing he was an Englishman, I never would have understood him. Because I used to take him around. That's where he got all these beautiful paintings.
And that is the end of the interview.